Hi, it's how are you?
Good, good.
I have to congratulate you on the Becomers.
Thank
This
you.
is such a sweet movie.
Oh, thanks.
You've got a love story that drives everything, but it's packaged in this colorful and fun body snatching film. Your two lovers have incredible vulnerability that's wonderful to watch as they navigate the earth and humans. And then in that third act with a birth is just so endearing. And the great messaging that it gives of hope and commonality, not only among humans, but different species. Just so beautifully, such a beautifully told story.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
I'm not surprised that Swanberg is a producer on it because I know he loves films that have messaging, that have some sensitivity to them. And that's exactly what you do here with the Becomers. Job so well done, Zach.
Good to hear. Good to hear.
Where did you get the idea for this story? How did this start? Because I know some people are going to think, oh my God, it's Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That hard edge is not there at all. And it's not really the sci-fi invasion that people think about from the older film.
I like to side with outsiders, I like to highlight and empathize with, unique perspectives, and those perspectives usually come from the outside of a situation. Joe and Eddie Linker, who's one of the other producers on this, reached out to me in early 2021 and just asked if I had any ideas for low budget genre movies that we could shoot in Chicago. And so I basically came up with this idea based on that directive. I had just sort of watched all of the original Star Trek series, which was very important to me in my COVID months. Was interested in working in the science fiction space, and had actually read the novel of Invasion of the Body Snatchers a few years before that. So it's, I always really, I love those old science fiction movies, and it was just on my brain at the time. So having the idea to use body snatching as a sort of through line was sort of that's where that seed came from. But then obviously, Invasion of the Body Snatchers already exists, and so do multiple remakes of it. So it made sense to follow the aliens. And then if you're following the aliens, the point of tension and suspense in the film is no longer which people are going to turn into aliens next. It's what are the bodies that the aliens inhabit? What trouble are those bodies going to get the aliens into? And what dangers or surprises can come from dropping in on someone's life in that way?
That's what humans are about. Who knows what
Sure.
lurks behind the closed doors
Sure.
and within.
Literally in this movie.
Literally. And the way that you do the handoffs from body to body, I really like how you do that. And you'll give us a jarring moment, but you never lose the ultimate goal of the aliens, which to find each other. And I think that's really important. And with those body handoffs, you very easily could have gone very, very, very sci-fi. And you didn't do it. You really tempered yourself and stayed focused on the story.
Well, yeah, it's also one of those things where, you know, they, I think I counted at one point, and the, you know, they murder almost a dozen people in the movie,
yeah.
if we're getting down to brass tacks. But you see very little of that. And part of it is also, you know, it is to keep our sympathies with the aliens. I think if I was constantly depicting them murdering people and depicting the bodies or whatever of the people they murdered, you do see some of it.
Right.
But it's not, that point isn't always explicitly made. And it is, that was a conscious decision to not, demonize the thing, to not present the aliens as this humanity, even though, you know, all the information is in the movie indicating that they also are.
And this all leads to your visual grammar and working with Daryl Pittman on sure. this.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the visual grammar. I like the framing. I like the, I don't know, like the nighttime scenes and all. You get that hanging moisture of high humidity in the air. All the elements of the visual grammar are wonderful. Daryl doesn't go into a lot of dutching. Everything is pretty much straight on. You stick pretty much with a two shot, a mid shot for everything, with minimal close-ups, and especially ECUs. So talk to me about your collaboration with Daryl and coming up with this visual grammar.
Well, so he shot all my movies, and, you know, there's a real sort of shorthand between the two of us at this point. So, you know, eye level thing is something I've always done, because mm-hmm. I've always made movies about, again, sort of outsider characters or characters who do things that maybe traditionally would be looked down upon or thought of as, you know, weird or strange. And almost every shot in every movie I've ever made is at the eye level of the main character for this reason, to, like, not cast judgment with a camera angle on something. The other thing Daryl and I talk about a lot from a visual aesthetic is this idea of, like, alien eyes, quote mm-hmm. unquote, which is, you know, in the lighting, we wanted to heighten sort of everything. You know, fluorescents are very green, the outdoors blue, tungsten lights are very warm, and just to boost all of that stuff across the board. And then from a coverage standpoint, you know, I watched a few sort of B science fiction movies leading into this, mm-hmm. which are all also covered very minimally.
Right.
Because they have to sort of burn through footage in a, you know, scenes in a short number of days, which we also had to do. And that was a visual language I wanted to inform this. You know, the other thing that I always try to do as much as possible is, you know, if you hold two people in close-ups, you are separating those people in a way,
mm-hmm.
in the cutting back and forth between the two of them. But if you hold two people in a shot together, you can imply a sense of unity, you know? So as much as possible, I wanted to try to hold those two central characters in frame together at the same time.
Yeah.
And use the language of, like, when we're separating people across two shots versus when we're including people in one shot as a way of telling the story of their connection visually.
Even when we get into the third act and we get into where we have the explosion of red, shall we say, with what's happening there, you really do, Daryl brings the camera out just a little bit wider to try and present that group with a cohesiveness and as one. I really like how you did that and how you planned that out from a thematic standpoint, a metaphoric standpoint. It works really well. And of course, once we start to splinter, that's when all hell breaks loose. So you've got a lot of meaning in the camera, in the visual grammar and your camera movements here. And it really works so well. Now, the color I love your use of color, be it with alien eyes, and the turquoise and the greens and the neon, the vibrancy of the electrified neon, but also the colors of Goodwill clothing and and the starkness within the house, the wonderful suburban. I'm going to adapt to suburban life. It's very white, whites and grays, but for some yellow, bright red candles, which are so out of place when you walk in the front door and see them there. So right away, it's kind of like an M. Night Shyamalan hint of red. Does red mean something? But really interesting that the way that you use color, what were your thoughts on your color palette?
Like I said, I really fell in love with the original series Star Trek, which presents a sort of like, technicolor vision of the future. And so I did want to sort of associate neons or bolder colors with the aliens, and a sort of like drabness with the world as it exists. Mm-hmm. And then again, this idea that like the way we were approaching the lighting is sort of from the alien perspective.
Right.
Really the sort of like, because that's what original Star Trek was for me during COVID. It was this injection of technicolor and fun and adventure into a very sort of, stuck at home, everybody's dying.
I just love, what you have done with the color. But another interesting element of this film is the actual look of the aliens. And of course, their sexual organs and how they mate.
Yeah.
And did you envision this while you were writing this? Did you have an idea of how this would look? When did that come into play? Because that's so fascinating.
Yeah, I had a sort of like sketch, like a one-page sketch of what I thought everything looked like, along with the script. So in the script, this is never mentioned in the movie, and it's not important to the movie in any way, shape, or form, but in the script, the main alien is named Y, just the letter Y, which is how we track that alien on the page, and when we would talk about what was needed for what alien while we were making the movie, we could say, this is for Y. And the partner alien in the script is named X. And so if you look at their faces, they sort of have a subtle Y and X implied in their face designs, and then their sexual orifices are those letters reversed, so the Y alien has an X-shaped orifice, and the X alien has a Y-shaped orifice, and then the little baby alien at the end is named Z, and if you look at its face, it has a little Z with its two eyes and its mouth, but none of that is ever meant to be sort of like explicit in the movie in any way, shape, or form. It just became a sort of like guiding light of what the look of those creatures would be like.
It's very inventive, especially the orifices and the placement on the body. And that I thought, it actually looks like if I'm looking down my garbage disposal, that's what I see with the rubber. With the rubber coming up, but really creative. And how did you find your VFX and your special effects team here for the makeup, for the creature creations, and the visual effects?
It's actually a group of people. It takes a village on these things sometimes. So the adult aliens were designed by Brian Spears and Pete Gerner, and they did the special effects makeup on my last movie, Little Sister. we had a character who was a burn victim in that movie, and they did that effect. So they designed the two adult aliens. The orifices themselves in the sort of lovemaking scene in the middle of the movie, those were made by and applied by Catherine Woods, and she also did the goo and stuff coming out of them. And the baby alien at the end of the movie is designed by Ben Gosher, because we needed more of a functional puppet for that creature. And so those were the three sort of big practical special effects people. And then we had another couple guys who did some of the extra goo and stuff in the other scenes. And then the eyeballs and all our other VFX were done by Josh Johnson, who's a very talented VFX artist who was very kind to lend his skills to this scrappy little movie and track every single blink on every single actor in these shots that often don't cut away. But yeah, it's just, you know, it sort of needed to be a group of people for this one, just because people were sort of coming from different areas. But it also means that the cumulative effect of them is cumulative, that a lot of different people are contributing to this illusion, and that, I think, gives it a little scope. It doesn't just feel like it's one thing. It feels like it, you know, there's a broader world of how these creatures operate that we're not maybe fully seeing, but that has a sort of internal logic to it, if you want to try and unpack it.
No, I have to say, the VFX and the special effects and the makeup work, very, very well done. The baby alien is so cute. Baby aliens are as cute as some baby humans. I think actually the baby aliens might be cuter, but but everything about this, it belies a really low budget,
sure.
So your production values, you really have done a lot with what you had to work with. Now, a very big element here is also your music and your sound. The sound of the aliens as calling out at night is so haunting, so beautiful, almost like whale song. Talk to me about working with your composer, with Fritz Myers, about coming up with the music, the scoring itself, but also integrating that hauntingness of the alien vocal.
Yeah, for sure. So Fritz also designed those vocals. And he, we had all of that, we had all of those vocals recorded, and we had a few different tracks that were in the tone of what we wanted the score to sound like before we shot it, which is similar to how we worked on my last movie, Little Sister. Based on the script, he just put a few different sort of vibes together, and we were sort of listening to, you know, sort of like late 70s, early 80s, early synthesizer music, but also sort of, you know, bands and musicians with more experimental edge, a lot of like early Devo and Throbbing Gristle and that kind of stuff. But the other thing that we really sort of direction we discovered we needed to take is that, you know, the music sort of had to always be on the alien side. There were a few cues early on where I'd say, like, you know, it sounds like the music wants me to be more worried about the person than the alien. I don't ever want to be worried about the people in this movie. I only want to be concerned about the safety of the alien. And then also, again, like in that sort of lovemaking scene in the middle of the movie, you know, we decided to score it, you know, very sincerely. You know, the music there is, you know, the music for a romantic love scene. It's not there to sort of say, oh, look at this, it's strange or gooey. It is both of those things, but it is also, I think, a beautiful romantic lovemaking scene.
It really is. It definitely is. It definitely is, Zach. You achieved that there.
Yeah, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then the other sound designer Max Phillips really did an amazing job. And similarly, it's a lot of like drones. It's a lot of things sitting under scenes. And then when it came to the devices and the spaceships and stuff, we also did try to take inspiration from older science fiction stuff. So a lot of beeps and boops and. Mm-hmm. That sort of sound to sort of bring the energy of those old science fiction movies in this movie.
Now, what's really interesting here with your story structure, and you bring politics into this, we've got political skewering and more happening, but you build and build and build to this, but you still keep your focus on our aliens. And you cut this film yourself, did you not?
Yep, I did, yeah.
So I'm curious, were you editing in your head as you went? Did you wait to get all your footage assembled to start cutting? But how challenging was it to incorporate all of these themes, but still keep focus on the aliens and not deviate from that?
Well, one thing that was helpful is we didn't have any material that didn't have the aliens in it, so I never had the option to cut in anything else. it just wasn't an option. I'm an editor by trade. It's how I pay my rent.
Mm-hmm.
And I've edited all my other movies too, so I do extensively shot list everything. So there is some sort of pre-editing done, in that regard, but I also have cut enough of these things that I know it'll like cover my butt when I need to. So mm-hmm. It's just a dance between knowing what will be effective in a single take versus knowing when I might need two shots of something in order to bring the best work out of a scene. We shot so quickly that I didn't have time to really look at anything while we were shooting. And we did not have an on-set editor, which is a luxury that I was able to have on Little Sister, but not on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So we shot the first shoot. We shot the entire movie in like 14 days. And then about 6 to 8 months later, there was a full cut of the movie that I had done. That I basically was able to say, like, well, some of this stuff just doesn't work. We shot it too quickly, or that practical effect didn't really work. So we came back about a year after the first shoot and shot for 6 more days. And were able to be spend more time on some things and be more deliberate about how, what we needed to get and what we needed to achieve. But an example of something that, like, I discovered during the editing process on this movie are those, like, mirrored establishing shots.
Mm-hmm.
Were really just a sort of, like, happy accident of playing around with footage and trying to make it more interesting than it currently was. You know, I think one thing that bore out from this having a much longer post-process than my last movie was that I got to, like, look at establishing shots enough times to be like, these are boring. I'm sick of looking at establishing shots. I'm going to figure out a way to make these interesting.
I'm so glad that you said that. I'm so glad that you paid attention to that.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, well, it's also, like, I think usually these movies are shot very quickly, and establishing shots usually get used to sort of build pace into something where it doesn't currently exist. And so if you don't have the recorded material to add a little moment of breath while also living with your characters, the sort of, like, go-to Band-Aid becomes, well, just show a building or
yeah.
Show some leaves with the sun behind them.
Now, I've got one last question for you, Zach. With a bunch of films already under your belt, now you've got the Becomers to add to that. What did you learn about yourself as a filmmaker in making the Becomers? that you can now take forward and implement in future films?
I mean, you know, it's hard. I usually say that, like, with each movie, I learn what I never want to do again, you know?
That's an important thing.
More what I don't want to do anymore, more than I learn what I want to keep doing. You know, this one was written insanely fast and shot immediately after that. It was a 3-month turnaround from starting to write the script to having shot the movie. You know, and then again, after that, we put it together, and there was some stuff that really just wasn't working. You know, I think when I look back at the production and how sort of hectic it was and how sort of quickly it all came together, now with the hindsight of knowing that people like the movie, you know, I think it was a good test of my filmmaking instincts and muscles, you know, especially having had not shot a feature for a little while before this one. It was good to sort of know that there is a, like, base level of quality by my standards that I was able to continue to put forth even under the duress of this production and the limited means that we had of executing it. You know, and that... I've always said, I say this to other people, and I say this, you know, it's actually one of my favorite things to see in the work of other filmmakers, especially younger filmmakers, is that you do not need money to be ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things are not the same, and that you can have these sort of big, wild ideas and pull them off with very limited means. The next time I make a movie, I would love to have slightly more means than I did on this one. But it's still good to know that, like, we were able to take some pretty big swings from a content, narrative, visual perspective and have them land in the end.
Job very, very well done with The Becomers, Zach. I thoroughly enjoyed this film. It's quirky. It's unpredictable. It's delightful. It's sweet. You've got great themes. You've got subtext there. You bring in some expected sci-fi tropes. You've got some cute tongue-in-cheek dialogue at times. And it's visually very, very appealing. Just...
Thank you, Debbie.
You checked all the boxes and then some.
Yeah, thank you. Well, you know, that's what I try to do. I always aim for maximal box checking.
Pat yourself on the back because you sure did it with this one. Zach, this has been so lovely getting to talk with you. I hope we get to chat again in the future. You go have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day. And hopefully we will chat sooner rather than later.
Yeah, you too, Debbie. Thanks so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Thanks, Zach. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.